Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
We put all these rules, policies, and processes in place, and we make them so complicated that, you know, and then we start to question them and we challenge them, we flip them upside down, and then we call that innovation. It's not really, like, we're just challenging the norm and flipping it around. I don't really think that's innovation in itself. I think true innovation comes from trust. I think that so often we don't trust. People want to be doing a good job. They want to see progress. They want to be part of something bigger. They want to feel valued and be a contributor. If they are getting those things in their job, then they are going to do a great job.
We're here today with Luke Jameson. He's the founder and CEO of Playfully. Luke has been named in the top 25 CX influencers, top 50 thought leaders for design thinking in the future of work, and the top 20 social influencers for gamification. He's a certified LEGO Serious Play facilitator. He studied design thinking at the D School in Stanford, which is pretty much the source of design thinking. And Luke's approaches have attracted many coveted awards, and his enthusiasm for CX and EX has helped shape some of Australia's largest organizations' employee experience programs. So Luke, welcome to Innovation at the Edge.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Tell us, the listeners, a little bit more about your own experience with innovation and employee engagement.
I didn't actually start in that space. I really fell into it. I was a baker and pastry chef by trade, you know, and I loved working with my hands and creating beautiful cakes and pastries. But somewhere along the lines, I realized that working nights makes mates very scarce and pretty hard to hold down a relationship. And so I needed to do something else. And so I took my pasty white skin out and found a job in the corporate world. And I started at the bottom answering phone calls. And what I found is that I just looked around. I'd always been really passionate about leadership. And I realized that that space needed great leadership. And so I worked really hard to move into leadership roles in that. Not because I wanted to be a leader, but because I wanted to see change. And I believe that there was a better way of doing things. I believe that if we focused on the customer, then we would, and that being the primary driver, then we would get better results. But then what happened is as I moved into these roles, you know, general manager of customer experience and all these sort of customer experience roles where I was had the influence, what I realized is that I had gone through 10 years of my career learning what changes, what creates great customer experience, which is employees. And you know, when I got to these roles where I was driving customer experience and influencing that and writing strategy documents, I realized that the strategy isn't going to change that thing. The post-contact interaction survey and what members say isn't going to change any of that. It's the moments of truth with the employee when someone first contacts them. That's the moment of truth. And so I realized that my passion actually lies with the root cause, which is employees and how do we make employees more engaged. And yes, it started in that contact center space and just getting contact center engagement lifted. But then I realized that this problem of employee engagement is beyond just an operational area. Like every single person in an organization, right through the executive, are all after the same thing. We're all after this idea of belonging, this idea of contributing, and this idea of being valued and recognized and seeing progress. The ultimate part that makes people very excited about work is those five things and of being a contributor, feeling valued, seeing progress, and being part of something bigger. If you can tap into that, it doesn't matter what the job is, you can feel engaged. And once you're engaged, you start to think differently. You become more innovative. You become more creative because you've got this freedom and this empowerment that comes with all of those attributes. I think for me, the first time that this really started to become a passion for me was I was running large contact centers at the time, and always a fast, dynamic pace, and there's lots of things sort of happening that they get people engaged and doing the job, but they burn out pretty quickly. And one of the things that I found that demotivated people more than anything, and one of the things that I hated about the job more than anything else, was that annual review of the KPIs, the key performance indicators, and doing it the same way all over again. And, you know, getting this big target that comes from the top, and it gets broken down across different layers, different managers, different verticals, and then right down to breaking it down to how many widgets does each employee need to then deliver. And for some reason, this is meant to motivate us and get us excited about work. And that was never the case. It's never the case. No one's ever getting up going, I can't wait to pump out 50 calls today. It just doesn't happen. And I started to look at KPIs differently and look at my team and how they were made up. And I could see that I had this diverse team of thinkers and people who were really motivated by randomness and risk. I saw people that were really into providing feedback and coaching, and I saw people who did love the competition, love the leaderboards, and love those short-term incentives. But I noticed that there was always just sort of one area that was achieving these goals. They were driven by the goals, but it's only such a small portion of the demographics that we work with. And so I started to explore that more, and this would have been 15 plus years ago. And at the time, things like gamification weren't really a thing, and I just saw this as a way to engage people at a human level and tap into what motivated them. And so I started to work on models that were actually going to embrace all of the differences that we have as humans, and how do we work together as a team. And my mission was to rework these binary measures that we place on people and employees, and find ways to tap into the human motivation, the intrinsic motivators within us. And that in itself at the time was really innovative, and starting to measure people on behaviors and not performance. And the funny thing was that all of a sudden, when we started measuring these behaviors and encouraging certain behaviors, people started to perform better. It was the byproduct of great behaviors. But then because people were contributing and they felt like they were a contributing member of this broader thing, part of something bigger, and doing things that intrinsically made them feel better, they stuck around longer, they performed better, they were happier, they were more engaged.
From there, it seems like the nature of play and gamification has become a really big part of what you do.
I've always been sort of young at heart, I suppose, and enjoy the idea of playing games, and I play sport and I've played video games. And when I started to study that and study why we play, it was so profound to me. It was so profound that play has been around as a form of learning since, you know, the dark ages. There's one commonality, and it goes across all these different continents. And in each one of these sort of old archaeological digs, they found a flute. And none of these continents had been in contact with each other. And it just sort of, it basically linked back to the fact that play was always part of our life. And play does two things. It suspends us from reality and allows our minds to be open to being creative, to feedback, to try things differently. And you know, one of the things I love about the Lego Serious Play side of things is that we think with more than just our brain. You know, we use our hands to do the thinking. And one of the things that I often talk to people in workshops is, I want you to stop thinking about what you're going to build and why you're doing it, and just start grabbing bricks. And all of a sudden, people start to create something, and their minds switched off, but their hands are doing the thinking. And so when we start to use things like play, we start to engage using just a mechanical part of our being and our thinking beyond just this chemical reaction in our brain. And one last thing on that, and that is that there's been some recent studies that really show that things like hands-on jobs, people who start those roles, you know, mechanics, they tend to learn more because not only are they using their brain, they're using their hands, and they actually adopt the learning quicker than a pure academic study of in the books kind of thing.
Play becomes a very safe space for people to engage.
Absolutely, and it creates this space that I find is very unique, and I see it so often where you'll be in a room with a whole heap of executives and maybe the next layer of leadership team, and as a novelty, maybe I'll bring in some people from the front line to really do this brainstorming exercise and get a feel for what it's like to be, you know, a frontline employee. And more often than not, when you first start, before you use something like play, people are fearful to say anything in front of an executive, that they're going to say the wrong thing, that they're going to, or they're going to be fake and say things that you know they think that the executives want to hear. Whereas when we start using things like play and getting them to build something, build what you look like in a tower, build what you think leadership should look like. Build what you think is the organization's biggest challenges. What do you hate most about your job? All of a sudden, people forget that there's executives in the room and they build these amazing models. And then we start to bring those models together to create a story. And nobody then is really going, my model is better than your model, because what you find is that people have, it's their story that comes along with it. And it's really not about how smart you are. It's how you're smart. It's how you're innovative. It's how you're creative. I see people create these amazing spreadsheets. You know, I've seen these analysts create spreadsheets that blow my mind. And if you were to say to them, would you consider yourself a creative person? You know, they'll, no, I'm no good. I'm a numbers guy. But they've creatively built this spreadsheet that is amazing. And that's their way of being creative.
What would you say is the key, in your experience, to engaging employees consistently?
I think that change is constant in what we do in work. Change, we ask people to change by giving them KPIs. We say you need to change how you do things in order to achieve X, Y, Z. We need you to align with our behaviors, our values, our mission, whatever it is. But change requires two things. It requires motivation and ability. And more often than not, we don't provide either of those. A KPI motivates just a small portion of people. We need to find ways to motivate people, and that's where gamification, I believe, comes in really nicely, that it's a way of, especially when you use intrinsic motivation, not extrinsic motivation. I think extrinsic motivation is very loud. You know, you give someone a gift card, you know, that it's loud, they use it, but then it disappears just as quickly. Whereas that intrinsic motivation, tapping into what makes us human, makes us feel valued, makes us feel like we're a contributor. Those things, they're much more quiet, yet they have such a long-lasting effect on what we do. If change requires motivation and ability, we need to think about how we're motivating our people, how are we tapping into their intrinsic motivators with them as a human. But then how are we closing the gap where there is a gap? And I think a lot of organizations fail to do that. We'll do it once a year. And then I always found that very interesting, in particular financial services companies. Compliance is drilled into you from day one. You know, we need to be compliant. We don't want to get fined. It's in the member's best interest, in customer's best interest to be compliant. Yet your compliance training was only ever once a year. And so, you know, that was never this always on learning, closing the gap, refreshment. We're almost like an organism when we're a company, you know, not an organization, an organism. And that if we all have slightly different ways of contributing, and we contribute differently, and if we can harness that diversity instead of just asking everyone to be the same, that's when people start to feel valued. They start to feel like they're a contributor and they become more engaged. I'll give you an example. I worked for a really large superannuation fund, one of the largest ones in Australia. And the culture, when I went into the business, was very prevalent. So you could see the culture was everywhere in the room. You could see it all over the walls. And very typical sort of use case where you would ask somebody, what are our values? And they're thinking about it and they're looking around for the signage to be able to read it because it's not built into them. And there was a lot of things that indicated that the culture wasn't great. You know, people were dissatisfied by how they were measured. They were dissatisfied by there was high attrition rates, the highest attrition across the entire organization from the contact center and operations department. And so we started down this process of asking employees, so tell me, what is it you don't like about having your calls listened to and monitored? And they would give us all these examples. Tell us why that doesn't work. And they would, again, give you all these examples. And then I would flip that and say, so if we could recognize that the really good things that you do, so if you've done if you've really engaged the customer and you've turned them around and made them happy, do you want to be recognized for that particular part? Yes, absolutely. And if you knew that any mistakes in that call weren't going to affect that part, would that make you happier? Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely. So we started to actually change, instead of like a broad KPI, binary KPI about quality score, say out of 100, we would then break that down into smaller little increments, you know, break down those big, those binary metrics and break them down into tiny little behaviors. And at the end of it, we had like 160 different behaviors that we thought, like these micro behaviors that we thought were really important to our business and we valued. And often when I would speak about this at conferences and the like, people would just look at me and think, how can you have 160 different things that you need to think about and do? How is anyone keeping up? Surely 5 KPIs is a better measurement. And maybe from on paper perspective, you would say that because it's easy and you can see it and you can track whether someone's performing or underperforming. But you could never really understand what the behavior was behind it. And so when we started to really hone in on these behaviors and value these behaviors and reward them in little ways and reward them in a diverse and inclusive way. So we knew that there was going to be people who were high performers, like as from a productivity point of view. And we knew that there was going to be performers that were really high performers from a quality point of view. But often those two didn't have one or the other. They didn't have the opposite strength. And so we would then value those strengths individually and then slowly bring them together to help each other. And it became more collaborative and using things like gamification to drive different behaviors. Saw this incredible turnaround. We saw attrition become the lowest in the entire company. We saw employee engagement go to the top decile, so the top 10% of all companies across Asia Pacific. This is going from having only a top 5% of your employees hitting all KPIs to over 30% of employees hitting their KPI.
It's really about listening, allowing people to speak and then have them be heard.
People want to contribute. People don't want to get up and say, I'm going to do a terrible job today. That's not the first thing they wake up and do. I'm going to get up and I'm going to ruin this day by how I perform. That they want to get up and they want to be high performers. People want to contribute. They want to be a part of something. Yet so often do we do everything in our power to make them feel like they're just a widget. They're not part of something bigger. They're just and that they're underperforming and need to do better. And so for me, I think listening is absolutely part of it. I think it's understanding the diversity that is within us as humans and embracing that. I worked with a guy who he'd been transferred from 4 different departments, and somewhere along the line, he ended up back in my under my remit. And the first thing I said was, why am I getting this guy? Like, I don't need him. I don't see how he's going to fit into my organization. Why? Like, why are we not just letting him go? That was my initial first reaction. And upon reflection, was a poor reaction, because I then embraced that. He then came in and I said, what do you want to do? Tell me about your strengths. What is it that you enjoy about working? And he told me that, and he was super smart, super smart, but a terrible communicator. He was very creative, thought outside the box. He could code. He had a passion for technology. He had a passion for data. So I said, all right, I don't know what to do with you, but I want you to be happy. So I want you to go away and find problems and come up with solutions for them. And let's try that out for 3 months. And if it works, then let's create a job around that. And the guy knocked it out of the park. He came up with some of the most innovative things, not just for the department I worked in, but for the entire organization. He was mapping where people were needing our services the most in our organization, and then delivering that automatically back to the reps on the ground, who would go out and solve for these problems. Just allowing him to do the things that he had strengths in, and giving him that freedom to do that, created one of the most engaged employees and one of the people I've loved working with so much. If I could work with him again, I would. And it was a real lesson for me, and to take a bite out of my own apple, to say you've got to do that more with the future people that you work with, because look at the fruits of that. By allowing somebody to do what they're most passionate about, what they love, they do it wholeheartedly, and you get these amazing results.
If you were to share with people who are listening to this, you know, as an expert, what is the secret sauce that they should focus on? What is the secret that would help them have a happier company?
It would be to stop and look at all of your employees, and then start to picture where their strengths are. You know, are they the type that is going to go out there and shoot the lights out from a leaderboard perspective and want to be at the top and want to be recognized and do anything they can to achieve that? Are they the person who loves researching stuff, loves coaching others, loves imparting knowledge and learning? Are they the kind of person who takes risks, is an explorer and explores, you know, are they someone that finds shortcuts? Bill Gates said it famously, and you want to find a more efficient way of doing something, give it to a lazy person. I wouldn't say they're lazy. I think that the type of people that are looking for shortcuts, they're actually very creative and they're exploring ways to create these loops, and we have them in our organization. Or are they the social person? Are they the person that is just bubbly and seems to champion everything and is always in a good mood no matter how little sleep they've had? When you look across an organization, you see those people. When you see people for that, you realize that we all have a place to play. And if we were all just the person that wants to shoot the lights out and be at the top of the leaderboard and do anything to be there, you know, are they the kind of person that goes down to the basketball court and dunks on, you know, 12-year-old kids just so that they can feel powerful? If we had a world full of those and an organization full of those, it'd be a horrible place to be. So why do we try to create organizations that are a bunch of people dunking on 12-year-olds? You know, and you see that a lot in sales organizations, right? And so for me, it is the secret sauce is to take a step back and realize that we have this amazing diversity as humans. Take it at face value. What does that person represent, and how can we utilize that to embrace them and recognize their behaviors and not their output?
Having engaged employees is actually an end in itself. You know, it's not just a technique to get somewhere.
The way I see it is that engaged employees, they are better at their job, and therefore customers are happier. And when we have happier customers, our management is happier because, you know, we're more profitable. And then more profitable organizations then put money back into their people, right? They then invest because there's a surplus or whatever, and they invest that back into their people. People who are invested in tend to then perform better because they're then growing, therefore they're innovating. And not only that, because they're also doing a great job and customers are happy and feeling good, what then happens is they have a pride in their work. And when you're proud of what you do, you also become more creative, more innovative, because you want to continue that feeling. And that intrinsic driver within us to keep feeling that way drives us to innovate. And so I think that there's such a close linkage between innovation and employee engagement. I think when we think about, you change because of two reasons, right? You change either because you want to be more like something or you don't want to be like something. And we often see that reaction when there's an organization that has a poor culture or low engagement. We see people making changes because they don't want it to be like that. The problem with that is if things don't change and they're not embraced, they become even more disengaged and leave. Whereas if you have an environment where innovation and change is embraced, even if it's not implemented, but just embraced and seen as a positive thing, then people keep doing that. They'll go back. Even if it fails the first time, they get the understanding that we want you to keep thinking about it. We want you to do it again. This isn't a failure. It's just a step closer to success, all that sort of stuff. People then do that over and over again. So that link between innovation and employee engagement is so powerful. And so when the employee engagement is positive, you actually get more positive innovation. I've got a four-year-old daughter and she loves play, and play is a big part of our interactions. And it's so important. But at some point during, as people grow up, we then say, stop mucking around, you know. Oh, stop playing with your food. Stop play. And it becomes this narrative in our life as we get a bit older. And then we transition into school, and we see school, you know, high school. It's like we can't, you know, you need to be wearing your uniform. You need to be there. The bell rings. You do this. You concentrate. You don't talk during class. And I'm not saying that every school's like that, and I'm not saying that we don't need some structure and discipline as well. But there's this natural thing where we start to forget that play is important. And by the time we're adults and we're moving into school, we're all serious, and we're like, we've got to be serious about our first job. And I think as humans, we need to stop and just chill out a little bit and realize that play is actually a positive thing. When we take that into anything we do and just embrace a little bit of play, a little bit of fun, don't take ourselves as serious, then we start to free ourselves from this reality that we've constructed for ourselves. And when we've broken down that barrier, our minds become freer to think, and that's when innovation happens.
Any last thing you'd like to say to people listening, if you want to, you know, have the legacy message or something that people take away and remember about you and your thinking, what would you say to them?
Oh, that's a good one. Look, I think it would be don't take yourself too seriously. Embrace the differences that are around you and in the people that are around you. Just because people aren't like you doesn't mean that they can't contribute and have great value. I think the magic of life, you know, how life is created, you know, the millions of different options, combinations that we as humans could be from the very second we're created. We are complex. The whole process of having children, if you've had children or not, it doesn't matter. Just that seeing that and how people grow, we're so complex, and yet we try so hard to make sense of that and simplify that and bring everybody to be the same. And in doing so, we limit the potential of our greatness. When that complexity starts to be utilized, innovation, creativity, success, happiness, empowerment, all of these things start to flow from that. We are, as a human race, are complex, have amazing diversity, and if we can embrace that diversity in a safe, inclusive way, we will find innovation start moving at a pace we've never seen it before.
Thank you, Luke.
Thank you for having me, and I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. You can find me pretty easily on LinkedIn, and it's at GamifyLuke on Twitter. So, feel free to connect. Thanks so much for this opportunity, and thanks for the time, taking the time to listen to my ramblings.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.